Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And now a word from our sponsor, which this week is the brilliant Clarks. You may have heard that Clarks and Spinning Plates have teamed up for quite a while, actually, which is brilliant. We love Clarks in our house. So this section of the podcast is brought to you by Clarks, for growing feet in safe hands. So Clarks as a brand have almost 200 years experience in perfecting their products. And they've taken this expertise into their first shoes offering. Now, listen, I speak from experience. Your child's first shoes are so much more than something you put on their feet. They are memory makers. I can remember all my kids' first Clark shoes. Journey takers as well. They mark that moment that you realise your baby is no longer your baby. They're a toddler. And so we've been thinking, fun activities to do with the kids, it can be a challenge, right? Even for the most creative parents during the holidays. You know, and we're also seeing our little ones' skills and dexterity develop, and you're trying to think of things they can get to do. So over the course of the year, Spinning Plates and Clarks are going to bring you an extra special Clarks Culture Guide. This is going to give you some inspiration on exciting sensorial things to do with the kids up and down the UK as they learn to walk and jump and climb and all those things. We've got some ideas for you. Do not worry. Take, for example, the British Museum. They have a Little Feet event. So they've got actually a selection of fun, free family events for the whole family throughout the summer holidays. Loads of stuff on their website. One of them is called Ride the Waves. Now, this is specifically for under fives. It's August the 21st. It's completely free. You just need to go on the website and register. It's taken inspiration from one of the exhibits inside the museum, which is China's Hidden Century. It sounds amazing. It's got creative elements and multi-sensory stations and relaxing areas. You're going to need a towel. It's got wet waves, soft sand. There's even friendly fish. That's what the website says. So it sounds really good fun. And as I say, take your towel because they're going to make a splash in the Little Feet paddling pool. There's also, as another, this kind of tip comes quite close to home, Victorious Music Festival. Now, I don't know if you've ever taken your little ones to music festivals, but I love doing it. And Victorious is somewhere I played last year. So it's in Southsea, down Portsmouth. It's an amazing day out. It's a beautiful festival. It's pretty big, but it's really special because it's got a real community element and a massive area specifically for kids. And once you're in, so for under fives, it's only £1. 5 to 12-year-olds, it's £8. And once you're in, there's loads of free entertainment. There's performers. There's, you know, face painting. There's just loads of stuff happening. There's Sonic the Hedgehog. You can meet dinosaurs. Yeah, you heard me right. There's absolutely tons of stuff. I actually took my kids there last year and we had a ball. It was such a brilliant festival and I really, really recommend it. Another tip, and this is across the UK, from Lincolnshire to Dorset, Kent, Cambridgeshire, the natural play areas for kids in National Trust properties are brilliant. So there's loads of stuff to do, splashing through streams, climbing up a treehouse, going through the branches of a little woodland den. I find when I take my kids to outdoor spaces, it's like everything makes sense. They can run around, they can use their imagination, just be free and happy. So check the website for the places that's near you or somewhere you're travelling, because in a lot of places the kids under five go free, and have a little look. So there's loads to check out in the family friendly section on their website for your options all around the UK. I want to say thanks so much to Clarks for partnering with Spinning Plates on this extra special Clarks Culture Guide. It's definitely given me some ideas. And we'll be back around half term with another guide. In the meantime, please let me know how you get on with your adventures. Share some pictures on social with the hashtag Clarks Culture Guide. I'd love to see you out and about. And any suggestions you have to keep your little ones entertained, please send them my way. I always need more ideas. Also, remember, Clarks in-store fitting service is available in all Clarks Kids stores, and each pair of shoes nurtures happy, healthy movement at every stage of child's walking development and beyond. So shop Clarks First Shoe Collection now, or book an appointment for an in-store fitting at clarks.co.uk. Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bexter, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello to you. I am packing for a holiday. I find it slightly stressful. Try not to find it stressful. I've sent the kids out to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles while I'm packing, and I'm a bit of a control freak, so I like to do it all myself. And that means that I always make a mistake, basically. Sometimes it's a very glaring one, like the time I forgot to pack myself any pants. There was also another time where I forgot to pack. What was I forgot for Kit? I think it might have been T-shirts or shorts. He had none of one of those. But I think it's just because my brain gets a bit split with thinking about the different kids and what they need, and I just get it a bit wrong. So I'm surrounded by little piles, little shorts, little T-shirts. I'm planning on doing some washing when I'm away, so I'll keep on top of it. I'm not taking much. They don't really wear much, do they? I don't really wear much. Swimsuit, shorts, T-shirts, kind of all you need, I reckon. Swimwear, that's the main one. That's the big one. Couple of options for that, so that when something's wet, they can chuck on new stuff when they go back in the water. And everything dries in the sun super fast. Oh, it's just going to be so nice. I've got 3 gigs between now and the holiday. Little bit of complicated planning. So basically, I leave tomorrow. The kids leave later in the week. Richard leaves with the kids. I join them when they're one day into the holiday. It's a little bit complicated, but once I'm there, shoulders down, relax. It's going to be good, and I'm so ready for a holiday. We had a lovely weekend last weekend. We went to 3 festivals, Camp Festival, Why Not, Rock Oyster. Took my youngest 3 with me and a pal for the oldest one, the 11-year-old. It was really fun. It was a bit drizzly, but the kids were still really good, and we went out in the rain and just got on with it. Ferris wheels and art classes and listening to music and eating food and all of that stuff. It was really fun, and the gigs were great too. So, yeah, very special. It's always really nice to take him away. And big thanks to my band and crew for being very tolerant at having 4 extra kids in the tour bus, which meant we had no spare bunks. So it was a little bit, you know, busy, but good. Really, really good. And thanks to Jessica for looking after them while I was on stage. Very important role, of course. The bigger ones I can bring without anyone helping me out, but little ones. I mean, you wouldn't trust a 4-year-old to stay still at the side of a stage for an hour, would you? No. So, yeah, it was really good. It was lovely. I'm glad I did that. And now, yeah, I'm just sort of pootling on, just I'm ready for a break. I need a little bit of downtime now with the kids and the family. I'm ready. Anyway, you did not come here to hear my packing spiel. This week's podcast guest. So the nice thing about having a podcast that's been running now for 3 years is that some people I've interviewed, and I'm now interviewing now, they've become parents since I started. So when Laura Whitmore became pregnant, I thought, oh, she could be a really interesting guest later on. It makes me sound a bit creepy. I don't mean it that way. I've known Laura for a few years, not super well. We've met on and off over the years, you know, in a work capacity. And I'd say it's only more recently that we've got to know each other a little bit better. I really like her. I find her really warm and smart and a really good broadcaster. So Laura is, she started off in MTV, presenting for MTV, and then she's now done all sorts of different broadcasting. I suppose most notably things like her own show that she's had on Sunday mornings recently. It's just finished the first series. She's been doing Love Island for a little while in 2020, I think it was, and 2021 as well. She has one baby who's now, I think, around 18 months, a little girl, and she's been pretty private about all that, so, which I completely respect, of course. But I was intrigued to hear about how she found motherhood when she's so in the public eye, and also the fact that I remember seeing Laura about 2 weeks before she gave birth, and it was on the set of Celebrity Juice where she was on one of the panels. She looked pretty phenomenal, and I was like, when are you due? And she's like, oh, 2 weeks. I was like, blimey, that's impressive. And then it seemed like you blink and she was back to work after her baby was born. And I sort of looked at it with a mixture of like huge, being very impressed, of course, but also thinking, I wonder what that feels like on the inside. I have gone back to work pretty quick from some of my babies, but that first one, I just didn't feel like I had much tethering in myself to know how to go about my work. But with talking to Laura, I realised that her work was part of what that process was, like making her feel like her. And as she says herself, she didn't want to be immediately the mum, you know, capital T, capital M, but to find her own way and finding her own way involved. Also, going back to work and having all that in the diary and with her mum there. And it really made a lot of sense to me, actually. I could totally understand the emotional core of why that was important. You were here for yourself. But it was just such a joy to spend time in Laura's lovely house and hear about all of this stuff and how it was for her. And yeah, I always have had a soft spot for her, but it made me warm to her even more, which, to be honest, is the outcome for pretty much every single guest I've had on. Aren't I lucky? It's just a nice thing, because I think when people talk about their relationship with, I don't know, becoming a new mum, it takes you back to a period of something new where even the most sure of us can sometimes feel a little vulnerable. And when you go back to that time, I think it just makes you reveal things about yourself in a different way, because that's what's happening to you in the process. That's what makes these conversations interesting to me. I love it. Anyway, while we're listening back to chat with Laura, I'm going to keep packing. So wish me luck. I don't know where my 11-year-old swim things are. That's the only thing I'm missing. Oh, there is something I should probably mention. I always forget when I do the intros that you might not know. I've obviously done my research on the guests, but sometimes I assume that you have as well. Laura mentioned sometimes her partner, her husband, Ian. Ian is Ian Sterling. He's a comedian and he also does the voiceover for Love Island. And if you're like me and you've listened to it, then you'll know he's brilliant. I thought I'd mention that just because she does mention him. I think that's it. I've tried to give a bit of a history. I'm just really bad. I always forget that not everybody knows the things that I know. That's bad, isn't it? As a bad podcast host. At least you have a lovely little section about the podcast, which is co-written by my producer, Claire, who's actually really good at those things. So that's good. Anyway, I think that's it. The packing continues. The hunt for the 11-year-old swimwear continues. Life is okay. I'll see you in a minute. Morning, Laura. It's really nice to see you.
You too.
How are you today?
I'm all right, actually. The weather's a bit grim outside. I felt, you know, and I don't know if that makes you feel more tired. I just felt like I started on the wrong foot this morning. You know, a little bit late, slept in a little bit, then running late for like nursery drop off and all that stuff. But I'm okay. I'm sitting and I'm chilling and I'm having a nice coffee.
Sleeping in a bit late sounds good. I'm all
yeah,
for
but
that.
Not in a good way.
Oh, okay, you know? Fair enough.
I'm late.
And what's it like being interviewed rather than, because I know obviously you spend a lot of time interviewing other people. Is it quite nice being interviewed?
Yeah, I've gotten better at it. I know the first few times I've ever been interviewed, I'm like, what do they want from me? Because I know how my mind works. And I'm like, is that a leading question? What does that mean? But today is fun.
Yeah, and I suppose you've got your...
I trust you.
Thank you. That's a good start. And we can hear Mick maybe in the background.
That's my dog. My dog is pottering around.
The pitter-patter of tiny paws.
Well, maybe. So needy.
I like it. And when I'm at home, I've got my cat, so I feel like it's a sort of nice step.
He kind of looks like a cat, doesn't he?
Definitely cats same, are bigger. He's the same sort of proportions as a cat. and so what's going on at the moment? I know you've got a new series that's starting soon, later this month. So why don't we start by talking about that? So
That's kind of a strange one. So I'm doing a documentary series, but I started making it over a year ago.
Oh, wow.
So it feels really strange for it to be coming out now because I'm so used to doing live television that you make something and it's out there and then, or it's out that week, and it's so immediate and you get that, you do it, immediate reaction, and you move on.
Yeah.
Well, it's strange to do something that I started over a year ago, actually talking about it, but some of the interviews and it's... Can you hear him growling?
I can't. Is he offended by my footwear?
He's sorry. I'm so sorry. He's offended by the fact I've got a croissant and I'm not sharing it with him.
I thought he just didn't like my high tops.
No, he's a big fan of them. He was rubbing against them earlier on. I'm sorry. Know your space, know your boundaries. And it's a very different to maybe the type of shows I've worked on beforehand and dealing with some quite serious issues, everything from misogyny and incels, which is a term that's kind of come to light in the last few years, basically a certain kind of group of men who define themselves as hating women, which is weird because I am a woman and sitting in those situations doing those interviews is a very surreal environment. But I did that like a year ago and now it's coming out and now you kind of have to...
Step
back in when you've taken that break away. But maybe it's something quite nice in that too, because I've given myself a bit of time, a bit of hindsight, which I don't sometimes get with things I work in because I'm in it.
Yeah.
So it's a very different experience.
But... Yeah. And I suppose also you've got the buffer of whatever else you're up to at the moment.
Yeah.
Because I imagine those topics. So as I understand it, you've got three parts to it. So you've got toxic masculinity and then closer look at BDSM and that sort of whole
world. And the rough sex and that world. And then the final one is cyber stalking. So, just a barrel of laughs, you know. You have to laugh sometimes. Some of the days I'm like... And actually, I worked with such a lovely crew, mainly female crew, which was great. And some of the situations we were in, you kind of are so surreal and some are really heartbreaking, but you kind of have to have that camaraderie and a bit of... What is this? And a bit of lightness within that too, which has been really helpful.
Definitely, because I think, we can kind of close ourselves off from a lot of that stuff most of the time because it probably happens in murky corners of the web or people you can block or things like this. But to actually sit opposite someone and try and work out what's led them to actually act on the impulses that, you know, the darker impulses they have.
Yeah.
It's pretty intimidating.
And some of these situations, I kind of surprised myself. I was a bit apprehensive with some men who I interviewed, and I travelled to America to interview a lot of the guys. And some would change their mind. They would do an interview and then they didn't want to do the interview. But I was surprised by how many people would talk to me. And even though I didn't agree with their views, I probably gave them something they don't always get, which is time. And after listening to them, I didn't... hate them as much as I thought I would. Does that sound a sense? And it was a very weird thing to deal with because a lot of times I would talk to someone and be in a situation I'd never ever put myself in and realize, oh, you've had a really terrible upbringing or something bad happened to you. Yeah. And it's kind of how do you define that and how do you find that out and how do we stop that happening? And these men who basically slipped through the cracks. And the one thing is, you know, is it just online banter? And we've all seen horrible comments and things that people say to each other online, but at some point that does cross over to real life and that does become a real threat. And we have seen that, and it's like, how can you differentiate between the two of them? But I was really shocked by coming out and going, I liked him more than I thought I would. This is terrible. Like, how do I feel this way? And I just realised everyone is... You're trying to find those human qualities in everyone.
Yeah.
Trying to find a bit of good and what went wrong.
Yeah.
That you feel this way now has led to this.
I think that's actually the way... what you're talking about there sums up a lot of what I think is wrong about how a lot of things are debated online, actually, is because we have got this quite binary thing and it's... You're so encouraged to be team A or team B and then just to sort of throw stones at the other side. But actually, as you say, if you start to go back in time to work out where things... Maybe where people weren't supported or where they didn't receive the support or the education or the opportunities, you know, that's actually how you make better progress.
Yeah, and just listen rather than shouting each other. I mean, some people are just dicks. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you're like,
this is true.
Some people say things and I'm like, well, you're just an idiot. So, but I do think there is, we don't allow ourselves, we shout at each other rather than go, okay, tell me, I don't agree with you, but I will listen to you.
Yeah.
And people can change their mind. I hope that's, otherwise the world won't get better. You can change people's minds. Or even just open them up to see new things and understand people's experiences.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard for a man to understand what it's like for a woman because they don't see it through the female gaze. And I don't understand what it's like for a guy these days. So I just think it's quite nice that we kind of talk about our experiences.
Yeah.
It's the only way we'll learn.
I agree. I totally agree. And is that probably like the most sort of, I suppose, sort of heavy, serious topics you've had to deal with in broadcast, you think?
Yes and no, because I think a lot of the light shows I work in come with their heaviness as well. Like everything, yeah. Nothing is ever as light as it seems. And I've definitely come up against, even like the first time I moved to London from Ireland and I won this competition to be on MTV, but like I was living by myself. We're trying to find somewhere to live, and we talked about this before we started, like going around looking for flats in London and going, this isn't as glamorous as I thought it was going to be.
No.
I've definitely had to, you know, in television it's a really great environment to work in, and it's a really hard environment to work in, and there's definitely ups and downs, and it's kind of finding your own voice within that space. And I've definitely worked on live television shows where sometimes personal stuff could be really hard behind the scenes, but you still have to go in and do your smile and do your job. And that can be conflicting sometimes because you feel, this isn't how I feel right now. But it's the same probably for musicians who have to go up on stage and maybe have had a really horrible day, something personal like, but they have to go up and entertain.
Yeah.
And because it's not for them, it's for the audience. So, yeah, it's, although this is, on one hand, probably... I guess from an optics point of view, seems heavier. I think we've all had to deal with heavy and light always. But now I can actually kind of talk about it in a much more real way.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute thing. And I think, look, we're lucky. We both probably adore a lot of what we do for a living
and
do something really passionate about. But I have had gigs where I've come off stage and thought, I mustn't misinterpret, like the fact that I mostly do enjoy what I do isn't actually intrinsic to me being able to do my job.
Yeah.
It's just like an extra.
Yeah.
I have to still to be able to deliver the same job no matter what's happening on the inside.
And it's hard. There's that juggle, and I've constantly got these like internal conversations with myself. And sometimes I have to give myself a talking to because I'll go in to do something that I'm really not in the mood to do that day, but I have to do it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you feel guilty because you know how lucky you are to do a job that you love. But it's hard, and I'm still navigating this industry and finding what makes me happy and also pushing myself.
Well, I did your show not that long ago.
Thank you for coming on.
Well, I really enjoyed it, and I have to say, I was so, you're such a brilliant broadcaster. I think you did such a... I know you've said about live TV and how you kind of work in that way, and your brain can be doing three different things at once where you're chatting to one person and working on the next thing and listening to someone in your ear. But I thought you were so... great, and I was wondering where you think you learned which job do you think has kind of given you the most in terms of like progressing with how you went into it and how you left it?
It's one of those things, learning by doing. I've definitely been in so many different situations. Like the first job I had was for MTV, so I went, my background was journalism, and I was working, I was interning, my dog is licking my hand now, I don't know if you can hear that, but I remember working in this newsroom and I found it really hard. I was just interning in this radio station because news is like not great. So if you're in that environment constantly every day when you hear bad things are happening or people do bad things, it does affect you. And I have a lot of friends who are still in news, and I'm like, fair play to them, because I don't think I have that ability. I think I'm going to say too sensitive. I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think I am too sensitive to be constantly in that. But I'm really happy with doing the doc stuff because I feel I'm able to be a bit more emotional with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like throwing myself in all these situations and giving it a go. So going from this newsroom and interning there, from interviewing, you know, people like politicians before they'd go on air. And then I entered a competition to be an MTV presenter and won that. So I ended up going from this newsroom to be like the lowest of the low in that situation, like making the tea, the coffee, doing the pre-interviews, to then moving to London within the space of like a month and being sent to LA to interview Coldplay. Do you know, like, how does the girl who makes the coffee do that so quickly? I think we were all surprised. But I think throwing yourself in situations that you don't think you're ready for, you just learn on the spot.
Yeah.
I think that has really set me up. And that's why I like live, because anything can happen. And it has. Like, I've worked in situations where in your ear you get told, I remember doing I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here Now, which was the backstage show. So we're in Australia at 7 a.m, because it's UK time, UK evening. And you're outside, so there's bugs flying around. And then you're meant to throw to a clip from a Bush Tucker trial. And then in your ear you hear, oh, we don't have that tape ready, just fill 3 minutes. And you're like, oh, wow. Okay, that prepares you. you'd rather not learn on the spot, but I'm sure it's the same with performances. You can't really prepare yourself for doing a live gig until you do a live gig. And that's how you learn. It's the best way.
And the more you do and the more things go wrong, the less anxiety you have about things going on, because you've sort of been through them all.
Yeah. I'm like, there's nothing that has happened. Like, I'm ready for everything because it has happened at some point. I've definitely worked on live shows where, oh, like, as I said, the personal stuff, like, you could be going through, like, a breakup behind the scenes, or you could be up for, like, another big job and you're really excited, am I going to get it? But you're like, no, I'm working on this job at the moment. Or, like, you know, I've been in all those situations, but I've always managed to, I don't know how. I'm a good multitasker.
Mm-hmm.
But then I find it really hard to just do one thing.
Yes, I can see that about you.
So, like, there's always something else going in my head. I'm still thinking of other things. And even, like, Ian, my partner, it's sometimes he's doing one thing and I'm so jealous that he can just cut everything out. I'll be talking to him and he won't hear me because he's just focused on that one thing. I'm like, I wish I could do that, because I'm probably thinking of other things, which kind of helps when you've got the in-ears and people talking to you and you're looking at the auto cue and you're interviewing someone else. But I thrive off multitasking.
Yeah, there's a certain kind of adrenaline that comes with all of that busyness, isn't there? And like having your brain stimulated. It's like, but if you were like strapped up to something, you'd see all these like little areas like lighting up at different times.
Yeah, like working away, all these little people inside. But sometimes I do find it hard just to switch off though.
Yes, switching off is often quite a tricky thing. And sometimes I wonder if you're like me actually. Part of my motivation for doing lots of things is I think my actual alternative setting is probably doing very, very little at all. Because I actually think sometimes I can be quite good at being really quite lazy. So I sort of make sure I've got lots of things I've got to keep going on with.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I can get so much done in one day, or I could probably do nothing in one day. I feel like there's no in between.
Yeah, exactly.
And I probably work better and I feel better when I'm being productive. And the more stuff you have to do, the more you get done.
Yes, I think this is true. Yeah. There's that phrase, like, if you want something done, ask a busy woman.
Yeah, she'll get it done.
So in amongst all this ambition and busyness, did you always think that motherhood would be something you'd want to have part of your life as well?
Yeah, it's you spend your whole life. Like, I went to a convent in Ireland, like an all-girls school, and you spend your whole life kind of being scared you're going to get pregnant, because that's what's kind of drilled into you. You look at a boy, you'll get pregnant. It'll happen. And I really wanted a career. And it was, my mother was a single mother who had a career and raised me. And I was at that particular time probably one of the few kids who was probably not picked up from the school gates by their mom.
What was your mom doing at the time? What was
so
her job?
She worked in the civil service.
Okay.
So she like went to work in a suit, and I love that about her. And it was, you know, 80s, 90s, big shoulder pads, perm. I mean, that was a mistake for everyone, wasn't it? Who told them that was good? But this is my image, and I love that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
I think she, now, as I'm older, I remember one of the things she said to me. She said, I've always felt really bad. I was too tired to play with you. But I never felt that.
Yeah.
And I never, I shouldn't say this, I never really missed that she wasn't there to pick me up, because I did so much stuff, extracurricular stuff after school. So in my head, I was like, oh, I want the career and I want the kid. And the kid will come, because in your head, you just assume that's what happens. And it's only when you get older, you're like, oh, you don't have to have a kid, first of all. And it mightn't be that easy to have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're like single, or you're like, oh yeah, I thought I'd be married by now, or I thought I'd be doing this by now. And expectations change, but then what I want changes. I remember when I was like younger, you're like, oh, I'll probably have my first kid by the time I'm 25 and then married by 30. And
yeah, you've got it all mapped out, haven't
you? Yeah, and then you get to 30, I'm like, I had my child when I was 35, and I still felt nervous telling my mother, as though I was like 16, going, I'm pregnant, oh my God, it's shocking. So yeah, I think I always thought I would have a child, but I it's funny. I just was always afraid how it would affect my career, if I'm honest, because as soon as you have a child in this industry, you kind of become the mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really tried to not let that define me, because I'm still me. And I'm trying to deal with my own stuff personally. I don't want other noise from the outside.
Yeah.
Which is why I've always been really hesitant talking about that, because as soon as you give a little bit, then suddenly it's like, oh, you're the mom.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, great, let's do... I remember when I was first pregnant, and it was during lockdown, so no one really knew. It was great. I did like lockdown for that. I know it was tough in many ways, but I liked my privacy in that time. So yeah. I think I was 6 months pregnant before anyone knew I was pregnant. And the day I got a call from like my agent saying, some paper knows you're pregnant, they're going to write about it. Classic. So I was like, okay, I'm going to control this narrative and like put it up on my Instagram. And then like the next day... And this, not to sound ungrateful, but I remember like loads of brands sent me like stuff like for having a kid, like breast pumps. And I got so overwhelmed, because I'm like, I haven't prepared myself to, I don't know what these stuff is for. And it seems like such a nice thing. And I feel so ungrateful for saying like, I'm really thankful for getting these products. But I was so overwhelmed. I had a pram come to the house. I had all these things, and I'm there pregnant going, I haven't really dealt with like having a baby yet. And now I'm the mom, and now I'm getting all these things sent to my house. I don't know how this breast pump works. Do I use it? What do I do? And I remember just being like, I can't deal with it. That I found really tough.
Well, I think actually what you've summed up there, I mean, obviously that's, you know, the idea of everything being sort of delivered to your door is very literal. But I think that shift in perception and feeling like you're suddenly, like, as you say, the mum, capital T, capital M, and sort of into this whole bracket, I think that's overwhelming for loads of people with their first baby, because you feel like you've suddenly sort of, it's a bit like someone, oh, you're having a baby, in that case you'll suddenly want to wear these kind of clothes, and I'm sure you want this kind of color scheme, and this is that sort of cotton. You go, well, I haven't actually worked out any of this stuff yet. And so obviously there's lots about parenthood that's a really universal thing, but then there's also the bit that's just when it's you and your baby and whoever else you're raising your baby with, or whatever shape that looks, and it's really bespoke. And I've always, whenever people are having their first baby, I always say to them, well, just remember, you're the first person to ever have your baby.
Yeah, so no one knows.
Yeah, so you can kind of as you say, like, create your own narrative, but also just set your own tone. You can do it your way, but I think I totally get that feeling of going like, stop. I don't even know what half of this stuff is, or if that's what I want in my life, or if I'm going to do those things. I haven't kind of worked any of that stuff out. It must have been nice for you to have that 6 months quiet.
It was lovely. It was really lovely. And I was still working. I was doing Celebrity Juice at the time, but with no live audience. And like, you sit at a desk, and I was a team captain, so you can't see your bottom half. And I get to go in, my glam team would do me up. I don't think I bought any maternity clothes. I just like...
So what, when I saw you at Celebrity Juice, I think you were really, like, very heavily pregnant, right? I think you had, like, 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, I think I filmed a show on the Wednesday and my waters broke on the Friday night.
Oh my goodness. Because I saw you in the hallway and you were wearing like this like little mini dress and like high platform shoes. I have to tell you, it was really funny for me because I didn't know, all I knew about, I'd seen the show, but I didn't know what my involvement would be. So I was like, I wore dark tights because I thought, well, I might end up, you know, having to go like crawl around or
which happens.
Yeah, and I wore little flat shoes. I thought, well, I got there and there was you in the platform, Maya Jama and like this like hover hover Dolce & Gabbana little get up, and I just felt like such a nanny. I was like, oh my god, can I go home and get changed?
I didn't know, but normally you start off really glam on that show, and then by the end of it they give you a pair of lycra pants and a pair of trainers. So
that's true.
But the one thing I knew when I was pregnant, I'm like, they're not going to make me do that, so I'm going to wear my heels.
Yes,
get me my heels on. And I really enjoyed that time, particularly my last trimester, getting dressed up and not just being hidden away at home. Some people want to do that. That's fine. I didn't want to do that. I liked that. I liked having fun, having a laugh over really rude jokes. It was really refreshing to, and it gave me a little bit of escapism where I wasn't just at home reading baby books going, oh my, being terrified of childbirth. And I actually had the most positive birthing experience that I think one can have, but for me it was everything I wanted it to be, because
that's
I felt
really
in
nice
control.
To hear. A lot of people don't have that, so it's really nice to hear.
Well, a lot of people told me their bad stories beforehand.
Yeah, that's a weird trait, isn't
it's so
it?
Weird. It's so weird. I always just say, but then also I'm very aware of my story is my story, and I don't want to make people feel bad if they didn't have that either. And it's really tricky, which is why I'm always really careful talking about my own experiences, because they're my experiences and they're so personal to me. But I think because I was working right up to childbirth, I didn't get time to get scared. Because suddenly, like, I was having a baby, and then the baby was here, and it was.
Do you think that might have been slightly intentional then, like as a way of kind of like knowing how your mind works and thinking, if I just keep, I'm still me, I'm still Laura going to work, and I still love fashion and my friends and being silly and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's finding what makes you feel good. Mm. And if that's being at home in your slippers on the sofa watching your favourite shows, or if it's in 6-inch heels, you know, listening to Keith Lemon be really rude and a naked man running around, so be it. but I found that really, really helpful at that time, because I needed that little bit of escapism. And then I remember someone telling me about, like, oh, you should make your birthing plan, and then, you know, some people laminate it so they can bring it in with them. I'm like, but how do you plan it? Because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I didn't write it out. I just, in my head, knew whatever happened, I wanted to have control, because I like having control. That's definitely something I need. And that was the one thing I always said to Ian with childbirth, whatever was happening, that I knew what was happening. And that was always relayed back to me. And that there was a choice. You could do this or this. This has happened now, this or this. And I think that's taken away from a lot of women when they don't really know what's going on. So that I'm always like just trying to reclaim that back.
Yeah, I think that you're right about the information and just understanding what's going on. But also, the more I'm listening to you, the more I'm thinking that, because I know that you went back to work with a really little baby, which I think actually is very, very you, and obviously was part of how your mind works and made you actually feel really safe within that beginning bit. Because that doesn't happen by accident. If you know you're going to bring a newborn, then you need to have, you know, the support around you. You need to plan that.
Yeah.
It's not like you just pitch up and go, oh, God, I didn't realise the date was, you know, so close to birth. You know, you have to
make
a decision.
Yeah. And everyone around you has to be aware of that. And it's also, this is the industry that we work in. You don't take maternity leave in the same way. I don't get, you know, maternity pay. I don't work. I'm freelance. If I don't work, I don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm working on a show, like Celeb Juice at that time, I remember going back, and I loved that show. It was 20 minutes from my house. I sat down, had my makeup done, had a laugh, went home. And I remember going back, I think like 2 weeks after having my child, because I needed it and I wanted it. But I was also breastfeeding exclusively at that time. So like my baby came with me the whole time and my mom was there. Actually, at the time, Ian came with me. So he was in the dressing room and I was able to feed every 3 hours. And as the show went on, my boobs got bigger, but it was great. It looked great. I was like, I missed them. And then I was at one point pumping during the show because all that stuff that was sent to me, I actually used in the end.
So it was fine. Headphones.
Yeah, I'll take that. But you're right. There was a lot of planning. And I'm lucky that I could do it probably at this stage of my career when I started MTV. If I had turned around and said, I'm pregnant, can I bring my baby in? It probably wouldn't have happened. But now it's like, I really want to do this, but this is the conditions. And it's, you know, it's even when I was doing Love Island, I remember like flying back and forth with her because I was still feeding her at that time. And it was during COVID as well, which is quite difficult in many ways. But every time I had to fly back from... sounds so complicated. When I went to Spain, I had to fly back and then isolate for 3 days before I could do the studio show on a Sunday. But I kind of like that because I'd fly back and then I get 3 days at home with my baby.
Yeah, enforced.
So it kind of worked out. I just had my little team around me and people couldn't, and I didn't have loads of visitors coming because people couldn't come and visit. Mm-hmm. But it worked for me and it's finding what works. But you're right, it was a plan. And if I didn't have my mom and my husband supporting me, there's no way I could have done it.
Yeah, and also I think there's a lot of emphasis put on that sort of early years parenthood and what that's supposed to look like. But actually, we're very used to the fact that when children grow, you know, culturally, we're really supportive of people having all sorts of ways that they go about their business when their kids get older. Mm. But actually, I think, you know, it's not a straight line. You know, if it works for you to have... I actually think bringing babies to work when they're little has worked really well for me as well. Because if I say to someone, can you just hold this baby for 2 seconds? Most people go, oh my God, how nice. Yes, please.
Yeah.
It gets tricky when they get older.
Yeah. It was easier when she was younger. And I didn't mind because, I shouldn't say, they don't do that much when they're babies. They just like sleep, eat, poop and lie there.
Yeah.
While now I feel more aware of, like, I don't want to miss like... you know, the first time they do this, the first time they say this word, it's really exciting at this time. Like the 2 to 3 is such a fun age.
Yeah.
Could I bring her on a flight with me every 2 weeks at the moment? Probably not.
No. Also, you just quite enjoy those little gaps where you don't have to deal with it sometimes. Yeah. It's quite nice.
Because before, I just used to have a little carrier, a little baby on me, and it was. I shouldn't say easy, but it was easier.
Yeah, they're portable. If you put them down, they stay in the same place.
Yes. Now it's like, where did I leave her? but then you don't know what it's going to be like until you're in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what was it like having that time with your mum? That must have been nice, having your mum around.
Yeah. That's been a really interesting journey because my mum lives in Ireland, but Daphne's been spending more time over here. She gave up 3 months last summer so I could do Love Island because I didn't know my hours, because you'd get a call from a producer saying, oh, we're going to use you in 3 days' time. So you'd be like, okay, I have to be ready. And it's very, you can't really book childcare that way.
No.
So my mom was basically in Spain for 3 months as I was flying back and forth. I'm forever grateful for that. She also loves that baby more than she's ever loved me, probably. I think a grandmother's love is very different.
She's not here to contest that, I'm sure.
Yeah, but she would probably agree. Like sometimes I'd be in the house, I'm like, where's my mom gone? Where's my child gone? And out the door in the park. But I think that's been lovely. And it's been a lovely time for us, because you kind of forget that your parents are people. And then it was like, oh, you did this with me. And she did it by herself.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky to have a very hands-on partner who did the night feeds and was there with me while my mom did it by herself. And I have no idea how she did that.
Yeah, your mom does sound pretty phenomenal doing that. I mean, I've got this real image in my head of her in the suits going out.
and the perm.
Yeah, but also how nice you said that, you know, she felt guilty, but you could reassure her like, no, I was fine. I built up, you know, I was doing other things. I got resilience. And it also probably sowed the seeds for a really amazing work ethic.
Yeah, it is. My mom has an incredible work ethic, and I think I'd like to think I've got that from her. I like working, and I will always give it 110%. That's mm-hmm. what she does. But I also like, if I'm too long in the house with her, I'll kill her. Do you know? But I think that's normal, especially mothers normal. And daughters.
Yes, yeah. definitely. But as we're talking, I can see you've got a picture up of Bray. So that's where you
from.
Grew up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's where I'm from. So my mom still lives there.
It looks very beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, that's this is.
I know this is the tourist version.
The tourist from like the 60s.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that was a photo. No, I can see it.
But no, I have such good memories of growing up there. And I think you appreciate a place more when you don't live there.
Mm-hmm.
Even just like I live by the sea. And now I live in North London, which I love. I love North London, but I do miss a bit of fresh air sometimes.
Did you ever think about moving anywhere with your child, or is it not something you ever thought about?
I think with the type of work that I have, me and Ian, like, we do travel around quite a lot, so it's just the base. It's going to be harder, obviously, with schools and things like that. But I like having a base. For me, I wouldn't have the same work opportunities at home.
Mm.
But Ireland's so easy to get to. Like, we can just go for the weekend, and we do a lot of trips. To be honest, with family come over here quite a lot now.
Yeah,
quite a bit. But I also have such a strong sense of being Irish, and that's something that I want her to experience as well. But I find that in other places, there's a London Irish Centre in Camden that I just did a big event for last week, and they do like Irish classes, and they kind of really promote the Irishness. So I'm really pushing that on her.
That's lovely.
Sense of identity.
Irish dancing.
They do Irish dancing there, yeah.
My friend Sinead, who's Irish, her daughter does Irish dancing. That was definitely a stipulation. They live in the UK, but she was like,
yeah.
Come on.
I got forced to Irish dancing as a kid, and my child will also get that too.
I wonder how you'll find it, though, if your daughter has a different accent to the two of you, because that could be quite a funny one.
It's going to be really weird, because me and Ian have different accents and very strong, specific voices.
Of course.
People always recognise us, well, him by his voice. Anywhere we go, I'm like, can you just please just put a different accent on? Because... And his voice is so loud. He's such a loud Scottish accent. And mine is not quiet either. And then we'll probably have this really, like, posh English accent of a child. But that was something I've had to come to grips with. And a good friend of mine, Imelda May, musician, and she's from, like, you know, inner city Dublin, the Liberties, and such a iconic, beautiful accent that's so Irish. And then... And her daughter grew up here, and she's got this like British English accent, and it's crazy. And I'm like, how do you find that? Because I had that question asked to me, like, how do you feel about your daughter having a different accent to you? And it's English, and it's, you know, especially coming from an Irish background. And my mom still thinks she's going to have an Irish accent. I don't think she's like, oh no, we'll just push the Irish. I'm like, you know, we don't live in Ireland.
You might be able to get her to do certain phrases.
Yeah.
That's what my friend does with her kids, like, makes them all practice. You know, what's a crack? And all that.
Yeah.
Sort of,
she'll
got,
be
like,
able
a
to take us off quite well. But, I mean, the accent is the least worries. Like, I'm like, if she's happy and healthy, like, that's the most important thing. But it is, I do find a lot of people at home ask me that question.
I think it's kind of just more, like, intriguing. But also, I suppose those sorts of things are a nice sign of, like, evolution. Because you've kind of, like, you know, got where you came from, and then this is like the next bit in the path, you know. It's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like this, like having an Irish mother and a Scottish father, and then we've kind of, I feel like London's such a great place where you've just got all these cultures together.
Yeah.
And actually, Catherine Ryan, who doesn't live too far from here, she's a Canadian accent, and her daughter has this English accent. So I think we're raising all these kids with these accents that we don't have. And she'll probably speak, like, and people will understand her more than they understand me. But yeah, it's even that I'm just trying to get my head around it. But she says little words now that the way I say it, or the way Ian says it. So at the moment, it's still, we can hear the Scottish and the Irish coming through.
She'll probably keep those bits.
Yeah.
Were you ever at all worried about your ability? Because obviously being able to think fast and respond to stuff is such an intrinsic part of what you do. Were you ever worried about how you'd feel when you had... You know, when you were a new mum and you were going back into all that, or was it not something that I suppose you didn't really give yourself much time to worry about?
I didn't give myself. I tend to be a doer, and it's only afterwards I think about things, which is maybe a good thing, but then sometimes I can get myself in situations.
You say yes to stuff without really thinking through things.
Well, I used to be such a yes woman. I'd say yes to everything, and I'd hate letting people down, and then I'd tie myself in knots, and then probably end up letting people down because I've tried to do too much. So I've really tried to say no and be a little bit more selfish with doing things that don't work for me. And I think that doesn't come from me. I think it comes from like having someone else that you're responsible for, because that's my priority. So if a job comes up and I really want to do it, but it has to be, I have to bring them with me, or I need this, or, and that becomes a stipulation. So I think it's more my priorities have changed. So sometimes I have to say no. But yeah, I do feel like I'm constantly doing things and then looking back going, oh, shit, like, I can't believe I had a baby and did that whole show and was flying back and forth and dealt with all those emotions. But then I remember someone like got the MTV job and I moved to London by myself, didn't know anybody, was working on doing this great job. But also, it's never as glamorous as people think it is. And I remember like a year into the job, a girl I worked with came up to me and said, God, wow, like, that was a big leap. Like, it could have gone terribly, like, moving to London by yourself. I'd just broken up with, like, my first boyfriend. Like, it was a real, you know, I was 22. And I went, oh, God, yeah, it was a big thing. But a year had passed by, so I only really thought about it afterwards. The same way now I look at, like, everything I did last year. And even, like, from 2020, working during lockdown, doing shows like Love Island, coming into that after, like, and dealing with all the emotion, how I got that job. And I think it was only now afterwards, coming out of it, I'm like, wow, I probably was better off not realising I was in it at the time.
Right, yes.
And it's only coming out afterwards, I'm like, I've kind of experienced it and gone through it, but I didn't realise I was doing that at the time.
Yeah, different ways of sort of processing things, I suppose.
Yeah.
And actually, on that note, what was it like doing the play last year, the 222?
I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was that quite a different headspace to...
Yeah, it is and it isn't. There's such a link, especially with theatre. I've done theatre before, but not West End. And I guess it comes to that live thing again.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
that live buzz and that feeling. What was different about that, I guess it was the rehearsal time I found really special. I really enjoyed the rehearsal time, mm-hmm, and the creativity we could have, even with a fixed script, what you could do with that. And it was a very small cast of four people and I felt very safe. And I think coming off a really big show where there's so many people involved, it was really, I think for me, really important to do that. And then having this routine of when I, although I was doing eight shows a week, I just had this routine of knowing what I was doing every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my daytimes here, which is the perfect actually for having a child at age. And then in the evenings, I would like just pop into the West End and do a play and then come home. It was lovely.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
Was it? I can't imagine doing, for me, like the idea of doing a play. I think sometimes I'd love it and sometimes I'd suddenly get a bit freaked out. I'm so used to having music as giving me the shape of my, it's like putting on a cape or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So were there ever times you sort of can, I mean, you can hear yourself talking in this room and it's like suddenly become quite aware of the moment.
Yeah, but then, what my fear of doing it was that would it become, not samey, because you're doing the same thing every day, but I feel like each show was so different.
Yeah.
And again, it's that live audience.
Yeah,
feel.
And the chemistry between every little nuance, isn't it?
And it would change and stuff would change in it. And it was a very safe environment. And I had a very lovely experience doing that. But it wasn't tense. It was, I had that routine for a while. And I actually quite liked my character wasn't like very glamorous. And I'd come off like doing live telly where I was super glamorous and like Celebrity Juice and Love Island. And I was like dolled up. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to like strip it down a bit. And then I did that for 18 weeks and went, do you know what? I kind of want to be dolled up again for a little bit. Let's do a bit more telly for a bit. And I think I like having both. And the same with doing the doc series, that was stripped back to a whole other way. And I don't think I could ever do one thing, which is why I find it difficult when people try to put you in a box going, oh, this is different for you. Are you going to just do this now? And I'm like, well, no, I'm never just going to do one thing. I'm going to constantly, hopefully evolve.
Yeah. I think actually, generally speaking, we're a lot more open to all of that than probably that's like the best time actually to be kind of quite open to different things and having lots of different hats.
I think you kind of have to as well.
Yeah, that's actually true. That's true. I remember it's probably about 15 years ago now where people started, if they were chatting to me about, I don't know, a new album, and they said, and what else have you got going? And I'd be like, no, just the album. Yeah. I realised, like, oh, I'm supposed to have, like, a sunglasses
range. And what's up next? And what's up next? Yes. Like, I'm just trying to do this at the moment.
I haven't done anything else.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, let's see where, how many other things can you put there?
Yeah.
But I think it's actually, I was actually thinking of what your perception is of how, you know, because you were saying that you didn't want to be the mum, but do you think, generally speaking, the perception of being a woman who happens to be raising a child whilst doing a job has changed a lot since you started?
I think it's a very different generation to like my mother's generation, and again from my mom's mom, my granny, what she had to deal with. So I feel really lucky for like all the women who've come before me that have allowed me to kind of work in this space the way I have. And I'm very, I think maybe having a kid a little bit older, I'm very sure of what I want, and I can kind of knock back any of those negative thoughts that come at me. It's still, I remember I found it really, because I'm so protective of my child, I was not putting pictures of her online because I was told if I did, then the paps are able to take pictures of her outside the house. And it's I don't really understand the logistics and legalities, but there are. And I was trying to work my head around, until I could kind of work out what that meant and how I could control it, I didn't want to do anything around it. So then I wouldn't put up any pictures. And then I'd get comments sometimes going, where's your baby? Or you're never with your baby. I'm like, well, I am. I just haven't put a picture of her on Instagram. Mm. And then I'm like, oh, maybe I should like lean a little bit that to show that there's a child there, because people will think that I'm never with my child. And that does affect you sometimes, because do people think I'm not a good mom? And I don't put pictures of her up, but even something, I remember once, this is when I first had her, in the background there was her pram. She wasn't even in the picture. She was like with a friend. And there was like a blanket over the pram, and someone was like, you're not supposed to have the blanket over the baby. And I was like, she's not even in the picture. And I was like, ooh. And I was like, I actually mentally can't put any pictures of her up because I can't deal with people's opinions of how I'm raising her.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm not able to take it on, because as sure as I am of myself, I can't deal with all that, because everyone will have an opinion. And as strong as I am, it does affect you.
Yeah, well, I think it sounds like you've got good self-awareness, because I suppose that goes back to when you were working in news and you said, I can't actually, I'm too sort of porous for this. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes I think those voices, particularly if you have got, you know, your Instagram is obviously a big workspace and it's...
And it's not fully real. I think, because like, I put up glamorous pictures, I'm like, that's not how I look right now. That's not... And I'm like, do I need to put a little bit more real stuff? I also don't have time the way I... You know, I don't have the time. But it is. I do. I'm constantly having these internal conversations with myself about identity.
But do you think that it's quite instinctive how you felt about the sort of boundaries you wanted to create around your private life?
Yeah. And I think that was from watching other women around me. I think I've had a really interesting insight into this industry coming from the person who interviews people. So my first job... Like, no one cared about me because they cared about the person I was interviewing. So like, I started out in MTV where, like, I interviewed you. I interviewed, I did Katy Perry's, like, first UK interview, like, when she was first coming out with, like, I Kissed a Boy, like, back those days.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lily Allen when she was, like, first coming out with her music. And, like, Amy Winehouse was around. And I'd see all these, like, brilliant, talented women. But I'd see also how I'd interview Britney Spears. And I'd just see how the media would... attack them and use any personal stuff about them that was out there against them. And if they were in a relationship, and that's why I was always really cautious about my private life, because I was always afraid if your relationship's out there and you break up, then you have to deal with this breakup publicly. And it's and I saw other women being torn down, and because of that it scared the shit out of me. So when I start getting a little bit more interest, people were interested in me, because they weren't at all at the start. Then I was like, oh, okay, I've seen what happened with these, so I'm going to be a little bit more cautious and try and control it a bit more.
Yeah, and those things are so bespoke, aren't they? Because there's things that, I'm sure there's loads of stuff that I would put up that people would think, oh, that's too much. But then there's other things
I see. It's how you deal with it. It's like, what can you deal with? And you have control over what you put up.
Yes, definitely. And also, as you said, the idea of anyone... If I put a picture up of the kids where you can really see them, and if anyone says anything that I would like get right to my core, so I'm just like, no.
My friend put up a picture of her baby, and someone had a comment going, "Oh, your baby's really fat." And I was like, "Oh my god, are we body shaming babies?" Oh, wow. Do you know what I mean? I was just like, "I can't. I'll take it myself, but you come for my child, I come for you."
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? That kind of like slight like tigress.
Oh, I remember like when I first had her, and also it was still lockdown, so. It was a really weird time where everyone was at home, but there wasn't events happening. And I think there was definitely a few more photographers around because they had nowhere else to go. And I remember, like, I'd get pictured going into when I'm doing radio BBC, and I never mind outside workspaces, but outside your house is a different level. And there was, I didn't realise, and I saw a lens of a guy in a car. And I can't remember, was she in the pram or something? And I just went over to him, and Ian was like, no, Laura. I was like, I just went straight up to him, and I just... I think I took a picture because, and also he was parked in an illegal place. I'm like, do you know what? If I can't get him, the council can get him. And Ian was like, he saw me go red and he was like, no, Laura. And I'm like, no. And he's like, no, you do what you need to do. He was like, she's in protective mode. Let her out.
Yeah, it's funny how that just comes out of you. Like,
yeah, it is. So it's so animalistic.
Yes, it
but,
is.
Yeah, it's just like a natural instinct that's there and you will protect at all costs.
I know. Yeah, it comes from quite a like base. But, you know, you read stories about like people being able to lift cars off their kids and things like that. So like, yeah, I have this like superhuman. Like,
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, yeah, you would. You just get, and it's, you don't know if you'll be that person when you're pregnant, but you do. It just takes over.
Yeah, it does. And actually, I was thinking it's really sweet when you said about your mum now and how, like, you can, the relationship with your child is such an ongoing, long one. I think, as I said before, you sort of put so much focus on when they're small. But actually, like, all these layers of you come out. And actually, when you were saying about, you know, when your kids are, like, two or three, and people always talk about their personality coming out, but I always think the same is happening as a parent. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, the things about, you know, what's important in your family house and what's your, where your moral compass is and all these things, they all start developing more and more because it's so binary, the baby bit, but it gets broader and broader.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the relationship now that you have with your folks will be much more nuanced and rainbow, you know, than when you were just small and just needed to make sure you were fed and watered and all those things.
And then I just have such a deeper understanding for, like, my mum and my dad now and, like, respect for, like, what they did. And also, I live in a time now where we do have a little bit more help and understanding. We're talking about, like, you know, we have things called lactation nurses, and we didn't have that. Like, my mom didn't have people like that. And we definitely talk more about our bodies. And I may not be saying all this stuff online, but I tell you, I'm talking to my friends about it, like, in a way that maybe wasn't happening before. So I kind of look to my mom and my dad, and they weren't together, but my dad was always so great with me as a kid and would very, at that time, very few dads would, like, take their kid by, like, he would take me overnight by himself. Like, he would, and he's great. We have a great relationship now. And it's only now I'm like, oh, God, that was back then, particularly, like, in the 90s, that that was, like, not many men were doing that. My dad, you know, considering he wasn't living with me, my parents weren't together, he was as involved as he could be.
Yeah, that's really lovely.
Yeah. And it's nice to see. And I think I'm really lucky that Ian has that as well. Ian's very good and very hands-on. I get, oh, you're so lucky that, you know, he's so good. I'm like, well, he's not, he's doing his job. Like, it's 50-50. We still have that thing going, oh, men are so great. But I've just, because of my dad being like that, it's expectation.
Definitely. My personal bugbear is when people say, like, if the dad's looking after, they say, oh, they're babysitting.
I know.
I'm like, they're not babysitting. They're
not looking after their own child. Yeah.
Come on.
I'm not paying them by the hour.
No.
Oh,
God. I'm actually doing Flaxstock in a couple of weeks, and you kind of alluded to your start with doing Love Island. And I just wanted to say, when I was looking back over everything, I cannot imagine how hard it must have been, that bit where you started doing Love Island and had to handle that series, and you handled it amazingly. We don't have to elaborate on it, but I just was so impressed with you. It must have been an extraordinary, intense and hard, heartbreaking chapter.
That was what I was saying earlier on about you don't realise until you've gone through it. I think that was like survival mode, maybe. And it was, you're kind, yeah, it's trying to balance it and be respectful and do things the right way. And I think it'll take me years to fully process what happened in that time. And you take over this really glamorous entertainment show. And I had taken over from Caroline when she did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here Now. She was a friend. We had that relationship. We talked during that time. And that's another reason why I'm probably so protective in many ways, because Caroline was so lovely and open about everything and gave so much of herself away. And I think sometimes that could tear you apart a little bit. And I found it really hard because I went from being on the outside to suddenly being in it. And it changed from what I thought I was doing being one thing to being this other thing. And then I'll never forget the final live show I had to do after she'd passed away. And it's like, okay, it's an entertainment show. You got to keep it up and beat, and it's about this, but we also have to talk about Carol. And I'm like, how do you balance that? And what's the right thing to do and be respectful for the family and be respectful to Caroline, but to also do your job, and you've got all this expectation on you. And I remember the one thing, and I'm really proud I did this, I just I said to everyone around me, can I do it my way? Can I just, and I remember speaking on radio being like, can I just do this? I don't want anyone else to tell me what I should do. Can I just do this, what I feel is the right thing to do? And I think sometimes you have to follow your gut in that.
Yeah.
But I don't think I am fully over all that time. I don't think I've fully digested, but I did what all I could do with that to get through it.
Yeah.
And I think that still has affected me today and how I am with things and how I am with issues and how I am quite protective. And it's just, and even now I think there's a lot of things that trigger me when I see how people are talked about online, even comments I got about myself, and I saw those comments written about Caroline when she was doing the show. I was like, oh my God, like, so I'm being brought into this, and yeah. How this culture that we have, an attack of different people, particularly in the public eye. And I find that still triggering, and I'm still trying to work. Do I step back if I see that, or how do I react? And I guess it's, for me, Caroline, I want to remember Caroline for the times when we hung out together and we went to Glastonbury and yeah. All those fun times, because that's her legacy.
Yes.
And I'm trying to like move on from the tough times.
Yes, I suppose it's a bit of a prism, isn't it? Because you've got the, you know, there's obviously your sort of, I suppose a lot of it leads back to your journalistic brain as well, looking at the, you know, the ramifications in culture and how that language is being used and how people are affected by what's written online. And obviously the overwhelming message that came out after Caroline died was about be kind, be kind, be kind. And sometimes even that gets a bit weaponized.
It gets used, because I remember once calling out a journalist and then they were like, oh, be kind. I'm like, well, I'm just saying they've done something about my child and I'm saying they can't do that. That's not me not being kind. And we have to be careful we don't weaponize it as well. And also don't use someone else, and especially someone else so close to me.
Yes.
Against me. And I think we need to be really careful what triggers we're using.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to say to you. I thought you did such an amazing, you know, I can't imagine how tough that must be, because I know you were really good friends. I once was in the teepee next door to you at Glastonbury.
And
so I could hear all the giggles and the dancing and everything. And sorry.
That's how I remember Caroline. And I just feel sad as well, because I probably wasn't as close to her near the end. And also I was, because I remember Caroline in our single days and we'd be like out together. And then I was like in a relationship and I wasn't probably going out as much. And then you just kind of wonder what happened. How did we get from this to this? And then you get a little bit of like that guilt, going, I had no idea. But also you kind of, we move in different ways. And I remember how supportive she was for me to do the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant a lot, because I just felt I had her trust that way. And I had no idea how bad it was going to get.
Like,
I don't know if... And that's something like a lot of her friends and family have to deal with as well, probably much more than I have to. And at some point you kind of have to not forgive yourself, but move on from that, because otherwise you just never get out of that dark hole.
Yeah, and also it's not like it's something where there's a precedent for that. I mean, that's a very complicated situation with loads of different things being affected in your professional life, your personal life.
Yeah.
You know, it's multi-layered.
Yeah.
So I think your instinct seems to be something that is what actually sees you right with a lot of how to handle these things, because that seems to be something you've fallen back on with tons of stuff you found yourself, whether it's a new situation.
Yeah, you're like, okay, how are we going to deal with this one?
And actually, I was going to ask you if it was your own words, because I thought it was really...
Yeah, and you know, I'm so surprised, because I remember I had a show the next day on radio and my producer rang me and says, you don't have to come in tomorrow. And I was like, I think I need to come in tomorrow, if I'm honest. And I also knew, this is a horrible thing to think about, but I was like, no one will leave me alone until I say something.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say it my way and then have said it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have people trying to get something from me, because it happened. Like, people wanted a picture of you crying, or people wanted a picture of you or something, saying something. Or if you haven't said something, then you don't care. And
yeah,
I remember just messaging my producer going, I'm going to come in tomorrow. I had lovely people in the studio with me that day who I felt safe with. And I don't even think they looked at... I remember writing out what I wanted to say, but no one changed it. No one said... And they're like, you say what you need to say. And then I remember just, like, turning my phone off and, like, disappearing for, like, the week.
Yeah. But that's the right thing to have people say. They don't need to check what you're going to write. You're grown up.
But we live in a world where people try to, like, put words in your mouth. And I was like, these are my words. And I can't. And now I don't even look and think about. I don't even know what I said. Those I can't even remember because it just felt like that's what it was at the moment. But it feels like so long ago, and yet it, not. It's still still there.
Yeah, it's recent. But I think you've talked a lot about having that safety of who's around you, and I think that's one of the things that experience brings you, isn't it? Of like knowing, like, I want to have these good people around me, and everyone else can sort of fade away. Like, so long as you've got that good counsel, that support, those good people, it all kind of comes back to that, doesn't it?
I think something that you'll relate to is just like family and having your bubble around you. And I'm so grateful of like my happy, safe home. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of, you go off and you do whatever you're, jobs and it's fun and we're lucky, but it's a lot of high pressure, and then you just come home and you just be silly, and you've got your little safe space, and you've got your girlfriends to rant about things and moan about things that you don't have to, you know, I don't need to rant and moan online because that's what I do with my friends.
Absolutely.
and have all those conversations. And I think that's the trouble, is if you don't have that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But I think actually, you know, you've got the juxtaposition of 2020 and the shock and all of the things you know, you say you're still processing.
Yeah.
And then the next year.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
Yeah, 2021, where you found yourself like having your baby
and COVID.
And then you just it probably does bring on a next level of appreciation for the cocoon.
And I think I've grown a lot, and I feel I should be weaker, but I'm stronger, and I know, like, I'm really clear on what I want to do and what I don't want to do, and speaking up for myself when I have to in a way that probably Laura 10 years ago wouldn't. And I'm grateful for that. Like, I feel like I feel strong coming through. I feel strong this year. I feel stronger than I thought I would, because I should feel weak.
Oh, well, no, cheers to that. And I really appreciate you letting me come into your your cocoon. Thank you, it's been very lovely. I'm going to finish my tea. I know the Irish thing is to make loads of cups of tea and then leave them half done.
And you're having Irish tea bags. They're Lion's Gold blend. That's very good.
You've made it the same colour as my French and Aid. I know this is the right way. It's all very
Have you seen that when you've got the colour chart to see which tea you are? So that's a classic Irish.
It is. It's perfect. Thank you. And thank you to Mick for
sleeping. Is he falling asleep? Have I bored you?
No, he's not.
I was listening. He's content. Happy. Okay.
He's been having some nice strokes. He's all good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, thank you to Laura. What a lovely conversation in her beautiful home with a lovely, very well-made cup of tea in front of me. Perfect. So I told you, it was a really nice chat, really proper. And in that time that I've been listening to that, I've nearly finished. I've done 1, 2, 3 out of 4 kids. My eldest can do himself. Probably the others can too, but I don't really trust them. So yeah, I'm getting on with it. And I think I've not got much to do for me, actually. I mean, the thing about summer holidays is when you get there, you don't really wear much, do you? It's like swimsuits, shorts, T-shirts, a couple of dresses. Done, right? It's funny, I don't know about you, but I used to pack for holidays as if I was sort of someone else on holiday. So I'd take things I never wear anywhere else. I think I've got better at going, no, let's actually pack for the person I am and how I actually like to dress. So yeah, mainly I just can't wait to be there. It's going to be so nice. I've got 3 gigs between me and doing nothing for 10 days. And I'm really, really ready for it. Bring it on. I hope you've managed to have a break at some point this summer. It does feel nice. I used to not really have holidays. I used to just sort of push on and book in work and then get to the end of the year and just sort of have the odd little break here and there that would sort of plug some gaps, but not really. And you know what? You don't win any prizes. Nobody says to you at the end of the year, congratulations, you didn't have a holiday. That's really dedicated of you. You just think, oh, that's a bit silly. So Richard and I now are much, much better at just booking in the holiday and saying to work, don't tell us if any work comes in. We don't want to know about it. We just need a break. And the kids are so excited too. So that's cute. Anyway, I will speak to you on the other side and have a lovely week in the meantime. And here's hoping that the UK weather perks up a tiny bit because it's been non-stop rain. Not digging that. So yeah, a little bit of sunshine be good, please. All right, I will speak to you soon. I've got another lovely guest for you next week. Thanks so much to Laura, to my producer Claire, to editor Richard, who I'm also married to, so thanks for all of the above. Thanks to Ella May for the artwork. Mainly, as always, thank you to you for lending me your ears. Lots of love. Bye.